This is the TAM Talk Radio Network.
Little Jim Croce. Good old Jim Croce. I wish he was still around. Boy, he was really a talented guy. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy. I am still around. So is Big Ed Davis. He's with me, my buddy. And we thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. Wow, July the 28th, last Tuesday in the month. In a few minutes, Thomas Cargill of the Independent Institute's going to be with us. We're going to talk about eugenics. You know anything about eugenics? Do you know what it means? We're going to talk about the history of eugenics and our failure to confront it or even teach it in schools. So stay tuned for that. I think you're going to find this extremely interesting, whether you're pro-life or you're pro-choice. Also, President Trump has gone back to his tweeting ways in the early morning hours. Is that working out for him? He was blasting Joe Biden this morning and the rioters. I thought for a while, you know, he had pulled in his horns. I'm not so sure. So will his tweets help his reelection? Or are they going to help sink him? We'll talk about it. And also, we're going to talk with the guy leading the Get Out the Vote effort for Republicans in North Pinellas County. His name is Ron Ogden. We've talked with him before. And we're going to ask about the turnout next month in the Florida primary. Is there any reason to go and vote? We'll talk about that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, I think this is a great one. And we can disagree on the top 10. However, we're going to give you the top 10 funniest movies of all time, as decided by the American Film Institute. Funniest movies of all. Let's see if Ed will know what the funniest. Let's see if Ed will have seen the funniest movie of all time. I'm sure he'll have a selection.
That I have.
So we'll find out, Ed. You're going to have to just hold your horses. I'm not going to get going on this right now. Not at all. I want to tell people also that you can listen into us anytime your little old heart desires, because we're on podcast. Ed puts every show on podcast. Go to OurFreedomWorks.com, and you can listen anytime. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. We're also sponsored by Andrew's Master Barbershop. You guys that are in Pinellas County or in Tampa Bay in general, if you haven't gone there, you have not visited the best barber in Tampa Bay. You got to make an appointment, however, by phone. So call 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Well, we got a lot of things going on here. And one of the things is that our Attorney General is going to be talking in front of the House Judiciary Committee this morning. In fact, I think it's just getting underway right now. They want to get at him, of course. And it's run by Democrats, you know. Democrats control the House, so therefore they got like 10 more guys, people on the Judiciary Committee than the Republicans. So it's going to be a little one-sided event. But apparently, Bill Barr is coming loaded with ammunition. And he is going to give them what for? He's going to condemn the grave abuses of what he calls the, quote, bogus Russiagate scandal, unquote. He's also going to highlight black-on-black violence. Now, that's something we've talked about to some extent here on the show, because that's really so much more important than this thing about police and black people. The black-on-black violence, that's what's the worst thing. And he's going to defend law enforcement officers, apparently in no uncertain terms. Now, you know what they do? They give you, they give the reporters his opening remarks, right? So we already know he's going to say those things. They give him the opportunity to give his opening remarks before they have at him. And Jerry Nadler, our buddy Jerry Nadler, is running things. So it should be interesting to watch how Nadler tries to, I guess, make Barr look bad, because it's all political theater. This thing was figured out for him to show up before the pandemic really got going. So, and you know, now with all of these protests going on, especially, I guess, in Portland and Seattle, what's going on in Portland? Is there going to be any building left in Portland before they're all through? What's going on? What is it, 60 days? Where is the mayor? Is the mayor hiding in his house? By the way, I think
he's the one who tried to take part in it.
Yeah. And did you know that they've now, I think they're confronting him at his house. I'm talking about the ones he's supposed to be palling around with.
What a shame. You know, when you said Nadler.
Jerry Nadler?
Yeah. Hmm. Did you know that, well, the Portland stuff has got Antifa all over it, that terrorist group.
Got Antifa's fingerprints all over it, yep.
Nadler was asked on the street going to his car by, I don't know who it was, a reporter, I guess, and wanted his wanted the thoughts from Nadler on Antifa and the whole Portland thing. And Nadler said that whole thing is just a myth being spread around in Washington.
How can he say
it
that?
Is so I hope that Barbara's unbelievable that people like this are running our country, that are running around with blinders on.
Of course. Of course. And the mainstream media has been downplaying all of this violence. Look, there are some very honest thinking, sincere people in the protests that really do want to see some justice for black people. Their hearts are in the right place. I'm not so sure that their minds are in the right place, but their hearts are in the right place.
But you know, it's two things, Paul. If Black Lives Matter, that they have their organization, that's fine. And a majority of them march peacefully. Then there's this other group. Now, but why isn't somebody higher up in this Black Lives Matter that's collecting billions of dollars in donations come out and say, listen, listen, Oregon, Portland, this is not what we're about. Stop that. But you don't hear it. None of them coming out and saying anything about it. Nothing at all. So if no one is coming out from Black Lives Matter and denouncing this whole thing, then obviously it's not part of Black Lives Matter. And then come out and say, listen, they have nothing to do with us. Do what you want. Get rid of them.
You know, there is a weakness in the hierarchy of both the Antifa organization and the Black Lives Matter organization and some of these other organizations. There's no like president, right? No, you can't name who the head is of the Antifa. There's not one single person. And the same thing with Black Lives Matter. Now, there are some people within the structure, however it's figured out. There isn't, you know, they don't get around a table and they say, okay, you're the chairman and you're the vice chairman and you're the sergeant. You know, they don't have any of that, right? It's very loosely knit, but it's got an agenda. And there are some people that are financing it. They claim that they may not even be part of it, but they are financing it. It's kind of like George Soros, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Financing stuff and then kind of washing his hands of it. He doesn't want to be directly associated, but he'll slide money towards them. You
but
know,
but yeah, but somehow thing. They're being funded.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are crossing state lines to incite trouble.
Yeah.
And those that do that are a reason for federal troops and federal officials to come in.
Like New York officials said, when we start arresting people and their driver's license address does not say New York, it's a problem.
There you go. So anyway, Barr is now talking, and he's not talking quite yet, but they're getting ready, I guess, for him to talk. So we'll kind of follow that on the side. We're going to take our break, and we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of eugenics, and why aren't we getting more of that taught in our school systems? She crawled in and took control. She was tired, cause her mind was a-dragging.
said, get some sleep and dream of rock and roll. 'Cause like a picture she was laying there, moonlight dancing off her hair.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best hair cutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the Tantalk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up, every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM, to Good Morning Clearwater.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Tuesday here on Freedom Works. We thank you very much for listening in, and we're delighted to have Thomas Cargill join us. He is a research fellow at the Independent Institute. He's also Professor Emeritus of Economics at the University of Nevada, Reno, and he has penned a piece about eugenics in high school history and failure to confront the past. Thomas, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thanks for having me.
I think this is a terribly important and interesting subject, and you talk a little bit about how eugenics actually emerged in the second half of the 19th century and kind of lasted all the way through the 1930s. That's kind of scary. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it emerged. The idea started with Malthus about limiting population growth because we would run out of resources. And then once you start talking about the quantity of population and limiting it, it's very easy to say, well, let's talk about the quality of population. Exactly who do we want to restrict the growth rate for it. And then there were some biological developments in the second half of the 19th century. It was mainly England in which eugenics sort of first emerged, the idea that we have these traits that are passed on through generation to generation and are largely invariant to our environment. But it was America, starting around the 1890s with the progressive movement, and for the next 30, 40 years, eugenics became a prominent feature of the progressive movement as a way to rid society of the unfit by breeding them out and breeding in the fit to produce a nation of thoroughbreds. And one of the most striking things about this, other than the fact that students, by and large, are not taught this history, is that the conventional wisdom is that scientific racism started in Nazi Germany. That's not correct. Unfortunately, it started in the United States. And Germany actually turned its attention to the United States as its model for Nazi race law. The Nuremberg laws were based on American laws. And this has been very, very extensively documented in a recent book published by James Whitman. That's quite a story, and students don't know about it.
No, that was going to be my point. I never knew that. And then when you started talking about eugenics, I started thinking of Adolf Hitler. And, of course, he was... go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, this conventional wisdom is this evil guy Hitler sort of came on the scene and thought all of this stuff up himself. No, he turned attention to the United States. It's an unfortunate and a very inconvenient truth that the United States, eugenics, the progressive movement, played a role in building that road from Malthus to Auschwitz. And the facts are incontrovertible on that point. And American students aren't exposed to that.
No, they're not. Growing up, I never heard a word about it. And I never heard a word about Margaret Sanger growing up. I heard about Planned Parenthood and about their ideas with birth control. But I never heard about Margaret Sanger. Tell us a little bit about, if you would, about Margaret Sanger herself.
Well, she's an interesting individual who is portrayed as a social warrior for women's birth control rights. And some commentary mentions the complex history that she was a supporter of eugenics, but they give it very little attention, and they try to whitewash her role in the eugenics movement. The actual truth is just the opposite. Margaret Sanger was an outright racist who was quite willing to interfere with people's rights. She suggested in a piece written in 1932 called A Plan for Peace that we should have sort of like concentration camps. I mean, she didn't call them concentration camps, but she called them farms, where people could be segregated until they learned the proper moral attitudes, and so we could, you know, eliminate the unfit from society. And in her view, the unfit included people who were unemployable, people with disabilities, people who she called imbeciles, and prostitutes, and people from the Mediterranean and Eastern Europe, part of the world. She did not directly say blacks were part of the unfit, but there's no other way to read her writings. And she was particularly interested in limiting the birth rates of blacks with what she called the Negro Project. And, of course, Planned Parenthood, the majority of its offices are located in the inner cities of America's major metropolitan areas. And as a proportion of the population, blacks get most of the abortions. Justice Thomas, about a year or two ago, in a decision regarding an Indiana case, mentioned the eugenics origins of abortion. And I mean, he was attacked in the press that he didn't know history, and that he misunderstood history. Well, it's the critics that misunderstood history. It was Justice Thomas that got it right. And this is a real inconvenient truth. It's not that, and the facts are sort of incontrovertible. And all one has to do is read Margaret Sanger's birth control review. And it's on the web, at least for now. And there are many, many articles in there that are just outright racist, where government can control people's lives in terms of birth rates. And one particular paper in 1933 was written by Ernst Rudin, who had just become an official part of Hitler's government, because Hitler became dictator in January of 1933 when he assumed the power.
Yeah, he became the chancellorship.
Yeah, and then very shortly thereafter, he became absolute dictator. And almost immediately, Ernst Rubin designed a program of sterilization, forced sterilization, and then a program of euthanasia of children and mental defectives. And he published a paper in a birth control review that had been previously written in German. And it talks about how we have to sort of very subtly educate people about sterilization and make it like voluntary sterilization. We should finance it with public money because people will have fewer qualms about it. And at the end of the article, he says, but when we really get down to it, coercion is absolutely necessary. This is something that's going to be forced on society.
There you have it. Wow. We're talking with Thomas Cargill. He is a research fellow at the Independent Institute, and he's also professor emeritus of economics at the University of Nevada, Reno. And we're talking about a piece that he has penned about eugenics in high school history and the failure to confront the past. And it's true. You never hear a word of it in school. Let me ask you, if we could go back to the 20s, when Margaret Sanger was, somewhat in vogue, was she kind of considered an outsider, a kook, by the mainstream at that time, do you think? Or were people taking her seriously, or just kind of, you know, like a mosquito just flying around and they would flick it away?
Well, certainly she had advocates and supporters, and she was very, very well funded. She traveled around the world, and she was taken seriously. I think, you know, the United States was a different country in the 20s. It was a more religious, a more traditional society. So that part of society with women's birth control, which I don't think anybody objects to, that was a new idea. And so one group saw her in a very positive light. Another group saw her as a threat to traditional values, and probably a smaller group thought her as a kook. But, you know, it's sort of like how we view a lot of individuals who change history. It's sort of mixed, and they just keep going, and if the conditions are right, they begin to change history. And Margaret Sanger changed history.
What year was that?
Mainly by...
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, she changed history in two ways. One is by getting the birth control movement started and seeing it successfully implemented in the United States. It was a long fight. Because it wasn't really until the 60s that birth control became widely accepted, mainly because of technological developments with the pill. The second is Planned Parenthood. That has had a profound effect on American society because it's what it's done. It's sort of institutionalized the killing of human beings. We can debate all we want about when life begins, but modern technology shows us that, you know, the fetus is as human can be. And this has profoundly influenced the history of the United States as well as other countries and become a very divisive political issue.
No question about that. What was Planned Parenthood? Let me finally ask you this about Planned Parenthood. So she establishes Planned Parenthood. I don't know what year it was. Was it in the 20s?
No, it was 1940. That's when
okay.
it started from, she started the birth control, hold on, excuse me.
Sure.
She started the birth control league in the late teens, into the 20s, established a journal called the Birth Control Review, which ostensibly was focused just on birth control, but it was really also an outlet for popularizing the concept of eugenics and influencing sterilization legislation and supporting state forced sterilization laws, which resulted in about 60,000 to 70,000 people being forcibly sterilized in the United States from about 1920 up until the 1960s.
Wow.
So in the 30s, late 30s, the Birth Control League, which was, you know, largely directed by Margaret Sanger, changed its name to Planned Parenthood. And that history is kind of interesting, and a lot of it sort of came, I think, from, you know, women coming into the workforce as Lend-Lease started, and we got into World War II, and that might actually be the real turning point of the women's liberation movement.
Right.
And so birth control became much more accepted, and to sort of broaden the policies, the name Planned Parenthood was adopted, which is kind of an innocuous sort of name that everybody could say, well, what's wrong with Planned Parenthood?
Right. Right. It sounds like it would be like a counseling group. You know, you sit down and say, okay, you want to have some children and you want to space them out. Here's some ideas, you know, that kind of thing.
I'm sure that was part of the motivation. And I think another motivation was to disassociate itself from the Birth Control League, because by the time we get into the late 1930s, the what was going on in Nazi Germany was starting to become revealed.
Yeah.
And I think everybody that has supported eugenics was running for the hills and denying that they
right.
ever had anything to do with it. For example, one of the arguments made by progressives is that American eugenics was not the crude eugenics of Nazi Germany. That's just not true.
Wow. Wow. It's just...
It is quite a history.
Oh, it is, Thomas.
And, yeah. And people don't know about it. And, you know, setting aside whatever your view of abortion is, if you are going to be one who supports that, and that's okay. We live in a democracy, a federalistic system, and states can make those decisions through the political process. But we should be aware of its history and what kind of institution we're really supporting. And that is denied the American public.
Absolutely.
And the reason I wrote that paper is for decades I had been giving lectures to my history of thought students about Malthus and eugenics and leading up through Nazi Germany. And the thing that shocked me the most is none of the students had ever heard of this. And so I said, don't they talk in high school history about this? And almost to a T, none of them had ever been introduced to this subject. They were appalled. Now, at the same time, there were students that say, well, I still support abortion. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah,
but at least be aware of your history.
Absolutely.
And what you're really doing
yeah.
here.
Thomas, I want to tell you, we could go on and on because I am so intrigued. And I think it took a lot of guts for you to come out and talk about this like you have and publish this paper. Because people, I know, you know, don't want these things revealed. I'd love to have you back on again. We could talk further about it. But in the meantime, thank you so very much for coming on.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity, and you guys have a good day.
Thank you, Thomas. Thomas Cargill, wow. What an interesting and important subject. We're going to take our break. When we come back, we are going to talk a little bit about the Get Out the Vote effort for Republicans in North Pinellas County with Ron Ogden.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barbershop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop, in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back. And I just noticed Jerry Nadler, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, that Attorney General Bill Barr has been called to testify in front of, has been involved in a car accident, Ed. Nobody was hurt. So it's kind of a fender bender, apparently, but they've delayed the hearings. Poor Jerry Nadler. I'm just berserk with emotion about it right now.
He must have ran into one of those phantom Antifa people, the ones that are just a myth.
Maybe
being
that was
spread around Washington.
Maybe somebody.
Is he doing driving a car? Have you seen that guy?
I don't know if he was actually driving the car or somebody else was driving the car. That's a good question. Because I was thinking about whether or not he was actually driving the car.
I don't think he can drive.
Oh, it says here. Actually, it says he was not driving.
So we can
blame the chauffeur.
Yeah, because when I told you about that article, he was being driven by somebody.
Do you see how out of touch these people are?
Yeah.
All of them. Can you imagine being driven around Washington? And I mean, just... Just the atmosphere, you know, that this is why they're so out of touch.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to get back to the, you know, all politics is supposedly local. And we got a guy here who is leading the Get Out the Vote effort for Republicans here in North Pinellas County, Ron Ogden. We've spoken with him a couple of times. And as you will know, if you haven't already, he's very glib. And very enthusiastic. Ron, tell us, welcome back, of course, and tell us a little bit as we approach, the Florida primary, August the 18th. Is there enough, do you feel that people are very aware of some of these local candidates here in Pinellas?
Well, good morning. I just want to take a second to say thanks to Andrew, our good friend here of the North Pinellas campaign office and the Master Barber of Dunedin for allowing us to fill in for him this morning.
Oh,
and, you know, to answer your question, Paul, I think that they probably are aware. I think that there has been much of an increase in involvement of average citizens all across the nation this year because of the great controversy that has been ginned up over the Trump presidency. I think the people, in their own quiet, determined way, are very anxious to get out there and show the world that they support the president who talks straight to them. And, I think there's a lot of interest out there, and I think there's going to be an unusually good turnout for the primary election, which is now just 3 weeks away, if I count correctly.
You are right. Yeah.
And,
exactly. Three.
It's going to be very important.
You know, there's no question about the enthusiasm in November because of Trump. In fact, they've had a recent poll, and those backing Donald Trump are much more enthusiastic, apparently, than those backing Joe Biden.
Well, they are. They are very much so. I think that, go ahead.
No, and so, therefore, I'm wondering if that would transfer down to the primaries.
I think it will.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will, and I'll tell you why. Because Donald Trump has kind of shown the way for us. He's re-involved a lot of folks who thought that in previous administrations they weren't properly regarded, they weren't listened to. And I think he has indeed re-energized the real American voting populace that doesn't listen to the mainstream media, that isn't led around by the nose by the media. And I think our thing, the important thing, if you will let me, is to tell people to remember that although the primary ballot is fairly short, they've got to get out and vote because there are some extremely important races in there. You know, I noticed in your previous segment you were talking to the gentleman about education. And, you know, education, in my opinion, is extremely important. I've got a friend of mine with me. His name is Jim Frisch, and he's a veteran of Pinellas County politics. He used to be the majority whip of the Florida House of Representatives, so he was chief assistant to the speaker. I was wondering if you'd mind if I put him on for a second to just talk about one of those races. Are you still there?
Guys, that'd be great. Yeah, Jim Frisch?
Okay, hold on. Just let me let you talk to Jim Frisch for a minute.
All right. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. So you were majority whip. And
yes, sir.
You know what's going on in the state of Florida. So your sense, I guess, I might ask you, your sense of the enthusiasm. You know, it's funny, Pinellas County, and I guess Tampa Bay in general, is a harbinger of what America, where they are politically. I mean, if you look at Pinellas County, it always seems to be almost just exactly what the United States, you know, politically is feeling.
You're absolutely right,
Paul. Go ahead.
Paul.
Sure.
Pinellas County is definitely a bellwether county.
Bellwether, that's the word.
And really important. And that's one of the reasons that the airwaves will be full of TV spots. Radio stations will be running lots of political ads. There'll be lots of direct mail for all the major high-profile races. What sometimes people forget is that there are races further down the ballot that don't get as much attention. For instance, in Pinellas County, our school board races are nonpartisan. So you don't really know, you know, what party they come from. They may be registered one way and think another, but they're so far down the ballot that nobody pays a lot of attention to it. But who we elect to the school board has a huge impact on our children's education.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're the ones that are going to be paying the taxes that support us in our old age, as we like to say. And so it's just critically important that we see to their education. In Pinellas County, we have several local district-wide school races, but we have one county-wide school race, which is pitting Stephanie Meyer, Laura Hine, and a fellow named Tom Topping against each other. Stephanie is my preferred candidate. I've known her almost 25 years, and her platform is investing dollars directly in the classroom because that's where the children benefit the most. Distance learning is wonderful for some kids, but for the majority of kids, that face-to-face learning is so critically important. And she's one of the few candidates who will come out and say, all this backup is great, but we need to put the money right in the classroom to keep... That's what will keep schools from failing, if we put the emphasis on the child. If you're worried about equity and things like that, you put the emphasis on each child, that equity issue will take care of itself.
Yeah, I mean, maybe more than ever right now, the whole issue of teaching kids is on the minds of people because of the pandemic. And yet we don't usually, let's be honest, most voters do not know the names of the school board people that run and don't really know what's going on. But when it comes to their own kids, you know, and involvement. And now we've got the issue of whether or not we should open up the schools next month and in September. Maybe I can ask you, do you think that's going to help drive voter turnout?
I hope so. I really do. I hope that people will start focusing more on the local politics. It's really easy to get wrapped up in a national campaign. You know, it's always present. It's always on the news. It's always in your face. But if you're Stephanie Meyer and you've never run for public office before, but you have a passion for education, it's sometimes tough to get noticed.
Yeah.
It really is.
What is Stephanie's, if you know, what is her feeling about opening the schools?
She has read the proposal to open Pinellas schools, and she thought it was a pretty good program. She would like to see the schools opened for direct classroom teaching as quickly as possible. You probably know that over the summer there is what's called the summer drop-off. You know, children have to be reminded in August and September of what they learned in April and May and June.
because you, if you're not in class, you forget some of this stuff. And so this time, this year, it's that summer drop-off is going to be even more pronounced. So the sooner we can get kids back in front of teachers, the better.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, it's a pleasure talking with you. Thank you very much for your thoughts.
Thank you for putting this on the radar out there for people, and tell them to go all the way down to the bottom of their ballot, because at the bottom of the ballot, you'll find a school board race countywide, and the longest name on the ballot will be Stephanie Meyer.
Okay.
So that's my shameless plug there.
That's all right.
Here's Ron.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
All right, sir. I thank you so much.
Oh, that's great,
Ron. You're doing great for us. Thank you.
Oh, not at all. I want to ask you a final question, and that is
about
this mail-in voting. It's become a bit of an issue. And, of course, we have mail-in voting also for the primaries. But it's become a big issue, and Donald Trump is not a big fan. He's not against absentee ballots. But here in Florida, we've had mail-in voting for a while, and in the back of my mind, I've always thought, gee, I hope my ballot gets there. And now that it's being brought up more than ever, with Donald Trump bringing it up a lot, I'm beginning to worry about it. What can I ask your thought on mail-in voting?
On the topic of mail-in voting, you're right. It used to be absentee voting. You used to have a good reason not to vote at the polls. Voting at the polls was, it was part of your civic participation. But the way things have gone, we're now looking at mail-in balloting. I feel that with our present supervisor of elections here in Pinellas County, Julie Marcus, who is running for re-election, I feel confident that the mail ballot is going to be well-operated, efficient, secure, and honest. But at the same time, I can't say that that's going to be the case everywhere. We already know about some of the shenanigans, shall we say, that the folks down in Broward County in Southeast Florida have gone through with their supervisor of elections over the past couple of years. It's a terribly big job to manage the voting system. And again, I think that it will be okay here in Pinellas. I prefer that people vote at the polls, to be perfectly frank. But given the situation as it is, we have to understand that there are people that simply do not want to take the risk, whatever risk there may be, of going to the polls. I'm sure that at the polls, they're very, very secure and healthy, and yet some people will want to stay home just as long as they vote. One way or the other, the most important thing is to vote.
Indeed. Well, Ron Ogden, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so very much for coming on. Thank you for all the work that you do, for the effort that you put into it. You know, thank you for your interest in getting people out to vote. I mean, you're one of those, if I might say, unsung heroes. So thank you so much.
Well, that's very kind of you. And thank you again, Paul and Tan Talk, for allowing us this time on the air.
We'll do it again. Absolutely.
And also to Andrew, too. Let's not forget our master barber, good friend Andrew Cerisi.
Yep, exactly right. All right, thank you, Ron.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ron Ogden. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, among other things, the top 10 funniest movies of all time.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best hair cutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tan Talk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., We'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine magazine and Bon Appetit magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is
all. This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works. By the way, we are here every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Great Tantalk Radio Network. Well, Donald Trump, in a pair of tweets last night, slammed what he called deranged anarchists and agitators rioting in some cities while claiming that if Joe Biden wins the November election, the country would descend into chaos. Now, for a while, last several days, Donald Trump has been away from the tweeting. And things have settled down a little bit there. And I thought probably because of his new campaign manager, who has talked him into, you know, let's back off some of this a little bit and let's get these pandemic hearings going again. And because we want to counteract some of the polling numbers that we are seeing. So I thought that Donald Trump would kind of pull in his horns a little bit, but apparently he's back at it. I wonder if early in the morning he's a little more feisty than he is during the rest of the day, you know? Maybe he gets up early in the morning because he's up like, 3 in the morning sometimes. Is it because he hasn't gone to bed yet or is it because he just woke up? I think it's because he just woke up.
I don't think he sleeps, tell you the truth.
Yeah.
He doesn't sleep much. I've said this to quite a few people the last 3-4 weeks or so. He really looks tired. You know, when he gets off the helicopter or whatever, he looks tired. I mean, his face looks a little sunken and, you know, it's one thing after another. It would drive me crazy. I mean, just like the Biden thing, you want to just come out and say, why isn't he denouncing these things that are going on in Portland and now in Tucson? They're starting something up,
Right.
Just, you know, come out and say it's not protesting.
I think this all works in the Republicans' favor. So this rioting is not something that mainstream America is very comfortable with. They're not fond of it, and they think it's gone way too far.
Most people I've talked to say, what the hell are we waiting for? You know, go in there and blast them. They want to play, let's play.
So here's what some of the things that he's just recently tweeted, the president. The fake news media is trying to portray the Portland and Seattle protesters as wonderful, sweet, and innocent people just out for a little stroll.
People are strolling around.
I think I'll put my backpack on, my black shirt, and my bandana, cover my face, and I think I'll just wander.
Well, don't forget the helmet.
On the helmet.
Because you fall down a lot.
Yeah, and your collapsible baton, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to get your collapsible baton in there. So he goes on, actually, they are sick and deranged anarchists and agitators. Again, not all of them. See, this is it. He starts out saying, portray the Portland and Seattle protesters as wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, they are sick and deranged. Well, some of them are screwed up. There's no question about it. And I wish he wouldn't just say and blanket everybody like that. This is where I think he gets in some trouble. I think people tend to agree with him that we got to stop this. But sometimes he takes these tweets, and I'm telling you, he gets himself in trouble. He's admitted it.
But he's telling you what everybody's thinking once again.
Yes.
And Paul, let me ask you, when you say he's blanketing, it's not all of them. If you're in a peaceful protest down in Dunedin about something, and a couple members of those people start throwing stuff at the police in the protester, what would you do?
Well, I would start backing the heck away from everybody.
You would leave.
And get out
would
of
you
the,
not?
Get out of
and
the
say,
general
this is not
area.
What I'm
yeah,
about.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to be part of this.
So if they don't leave, they're part of it, period. If you see somebody robbing a bank and you go in the bank with them,
well,
just,
if you go in the bank with them, you're part of it. Accessory.
You're
then,
part of it.
Now, if what you're saying is, okay, they're standing as a large group and a handful are throwing things out of that large group, right?
Yeah.
Firecrackers, whatever they're throwing.
The other ones are cell phone using or taking video. The other ones are all taken video.
I think most of them are there actually just for the experience. I don't think they're that strong.
No, they're there to say they're there.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And to be in numbers because they're being paid.
Indeed. All right, we got to do our top 10. Mm-hmm. We could talk forever on this, but Ed's got to go to the drums, and Ed's got to tell us what the number one funniest movie is when we get to it. So, Ed, you better listen so that you don't repeat one of these top nine before it. Top 10 funniest of all time, American Film Institute, number 10. Airplane.
Eh, okay.
I thought it was very funny.
The first 50 times it was funny.
Well, that's pretty good. It was directed by David Zucker and Jerry Zucker, their brothers. I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. Number 9, The Graduate. Remember that one?
I didn't see that one.
Dustin Hoffman.
Well, okay.
Mike Nichols was the director. It was like an iconic film when it came out in the late 60s. Number 8. I think you saw this one when it first came out, Ed. It Happened One Night.
No.
With Frank Capra, the director, in 1934. It won all the major Oscars, every one of them. I wouldn't even consider it necessarily a comedy.
Mm.
Okay, number 8.
Take your word for it.
Now you got me all confused. This is actually number 7, okay?
Okay.
Stop confusing me. MASH. Did you see
it? Really? I didn't think it was that funny.
Okay.
I actually thought the series was better than the movie.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did. I really think so. Number 6. Blazing Saddles.
Oh, that was my number 1.
Aha!
Come on!
Yeah, no, it's a lot of people's number 1. I agree with you on that. There's a lot of people that believed in that one.
Film that could never be made today.
It was very politically incorrect in many ways. Although I liked the campfire scene eating the beans. I thought that I thought that was very politically correct.
Mungo like candy.
I mean, we can laugh as we think about it, right?
Yeah.
Mel Brooks. All right, number 5. Duck Soup. You ever hear of that one?
No.
Marx Brothers.
Oh, come on, and to beat Blazing Saddles?
Duck Soup. Well, if you didn't see it, you can't very well criticize it. Duck Soup, Marx Brothers, 1933.
Oh.
Director Leo McCary. Okay. Number 4. Annie Hall.
Oh, God.
Did you see it?
No.
Oh, if you didn't see it.
All right.
Woody Allen. Number 3. Dr. Strangelove. Did you see it?
I've heard of it, but I have not
seen it. It's hilarious. Okay. Peter Sellers, Tour de Force. Stanley Kubrick was the director. Number 2, you must have seen Tootsie.
No, of course, yeah. Comedy, really?
Yeah, it was a comedy.
That was a drama.
Oh, Ed.
Come on.
Come on.
We got a minute left.
Tootsie was a comedy.
That was a drama.
Dustin Hoffman and Sidney Pollack was the director. All right, Ed.
And I'm going to protest here, but go ahead. Here we go.
What is the number one movie, Ed?
I don't know. This is mine right here.
Isn't there any
other
movie?
Where are the white women at?
Okay. Hey, that's pretty good.
Where are the white women at?
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Oh, my God. You're amazing, Ed. The number one movie is Some Like It Hot.
Oh.
Billy Wilder, did you ever see it
no.
on television? You didn't see it, but you're going to say something about it. Now, that's not right. Great movie.
I want my money back.
All right. Thank you for listening to us. We'll be back on Friday. Remember, freedom works. You'd see him work.